Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast for Tuesday, June 6, 2017. I am Jason Powell, and coming up after the break for non-members, my full review of Monday's WWE Raw. Monday's Raw was in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania at the Mohegan Sun Arena. And, you know, this was, I thought, a pretty good show for the first half. And there wasn't like the second half was all bad. It just really started to feel long. I mean, 3 hours is a long time. But and then when you follow it up, you know, when you're following up a three-hour pay-per-view, it tends to feel a little bit on the long side, especially if they're not closing the show on a high note. And I didn't feel like they accomplished that this time around. The idea was to build up Samoa Joe as a strong opponent for Brock Lesnar, and I think they achieved that early on when he got in Paul Heyman's face and told him exactly what he was going to do to him in a very calm and cool manner, and applied the coquina clutch to Heyman. But then in the main event of the show, he just had another long competitive match with Seth Rollins, and the only reason he ended up winning was because Bray Wyatt's video flashed and distracted Seth Rollins, who was on a roll. So I wasn't a big fan of that. As I wrote in my review at ProWrestling.net, I would much rather see Joe just squashing mid and undercard talent than having competitive matches that he wins by distractions with top guys going into this match with Brock Lesnar. You know, build Joe up, spend the month making it seem like he's a huge deal. And they didn't, you know, destroy him or anything like that. I think people are genuinely looking forward to this match. But still, I just really question the approach they took at the end of the show. Before we get going, I do want to tell you guys that ProWrestling.net Live was on the air on Monday. Keep in mind, we are on the air Mondays following WWE pay-per-view events. So the next show will be the day after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view. Will Pruitt and I taking your phone calls. So be sure to check that out if you haven't done so already. But we are live 3 Central, 4 Eastern, Mondays following WWE pay-per-views at pwaudio.net. And with that out of the way, let's get into the show. We'll start from the beginning, kind of work our way through. We get some just a recap of Joe winning the five-way at Extreme Rules, and then we got the broadcast team of Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Booker T on commentary. JoJo was the ring announcer. Bray Wyatt came out. They told us that we were going to open the show. They were advertising this on the website today, that they would open the show with Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns. They didn't go right to it. Instead, they had Bray deliver a promo, and he talked about how he is basically casting judgment on all who are guilty. He had a chance to slay the beast and save everyone from eternal damnation. So basically, he blames Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, Seth Rollins, and Roman Reigns. They're all guilty and must be punished, starting with Roman. And I like this because it gave him some purpose for having this match with Roman Reigns. It felt kind of random when they just announced that as opening Raw. Like, yeah, there's some history there, but I can't say it's a match that jumps off the page anymore. It's we've been there and we've done that. But by saying this, you know, what the little bit that he did, it's like, okay, there's a purpose to this. Unfortunately, I think it also kind of foreshadowed, not knowing at the time, but it foreshadowed what was going to happen in the main event, which, again, I wasn't all that crazy about. Roman came out, more boos than cheers this time around, and Cole was right there to call it a thunderous reaction. And in fairness, it was a pretty lively crowd. This was not one of those, some are booing, some are cheering, it's not all that loud. It seemed like everyone really did have a reaction one way or another in this particular crowd. There was a loud Let's Go Roman and Roman Sucks chant, dueling chants between the fans, and Reigns ended up taking the mic from Wyatt and telling him, that's why I'm the guy. And he asked Wyatt if he wanted to know what happens when he runs his mouth in his yard, this. And he gave him a big uppercut punch. And then in the opening match, it was Roman Reigns pinning Bray Wyatt in 1935. They gave him a good long match. The broadcast team really trying to tell us that Bray Wyatt is maniacal. That was Michael Cole's big line repeatedly throughout the match. It's just how maniacal Bray Wyatt was. Roman, once again, I mean, he's been in the ring with Bray now how many times? And every time Bray strikes the crab walk pose, Roman still stops and looks at him as if he's shocked by this and doesn't know what to make of it. It's like, at some point, you just walk over and kick the guy in the face if you've been in there in the ring with him enough. I know it's like, well, it's mind games, but he's seen this. You know, it's like he just gets up. There's nothing more to it. First time you see it, sure, it's kind of cool. And as time goes on, it's just like, why are you still thrown off by this, Roman? But the end result, it's kind of like, well, Wyatt can't even get through the first guy on his hit list. That was kind of the way I came away from this, but it was a good competitive match. Fans were into it, and I thought the wrestlers worked hard, so I definitely enjoyed the opening segment. Then there were a couple of commercial breaks in there, so just a long match that got them through roughly, with the promo and everything, over a half hour into the show, I believe. Then they were hyping that Samoa Joe would speak later in the show, and they went to a commercial. When they came back, we had Charlie Caruso interviewing Enzo Amore and Big Cass backstage, and she asked Enzo about being attacked by a mystery attacker or attackers and how it would affect them in their big tag match against Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson later in the show. Enzo said he didn't have the scoop like Corey Graves. Cass said he said it was insulting to him that some people think it was actually him who attacked Enzo. And he once again reminded us that Enzo is like a little, he kind of emphasized that word, brother to him. And he said he would watch Enzo's back at all times going forward. And then Enzo asked Charlie, "How you doing?" And she kind of looked interested as he walked off. I don't know if this was her trying to look interested and they're going somewhere with this, if it was just kind of a one-off looking interested, or if it's, well, WWE likes to have their broadcast team members just kind of stare off as the wrestlers walk away, and they hold the camera shot for way too long. It may have been that. They may not even wanted viewers to think that she was staring lovingly at him. I didn't know what to make of it. Michael Cole asked Corey Graves about what Enzo said. He declined to comment. We just kind of moved on from there. And we ended up getting some shots of Bayley. She had a welt on her back from the kendo stick the night before, and Cole said that the injuries caused her to go home and recuperate. So she had the week off. Which is smart. I mean, it was the most, if you think about it, the most extreme match on the Extreme Rules show, where they're hitting each other. Well, actually, she was the only one who took a kendo stick shot. So I like that they're selling that. And I'm still curious to see where they go with Bayley. And once she returns, it was a very lopsided, quick, and decisive match. So is it kind of a reset for the character? Are they kind of just giving up? I would think they're not giving up. So I guess so. We have to wait a week to find out. Backstage, Angle was staring at his phone. So he's now obsessed with whatever Corey Graves gave him last week, and apparently it is not connected to Big Cass and Enzo Amore. At least I don't think so. Now Alexa entered the room and he put his phone away, and she talked about how she's finished with Bayley. And she wanted to celebrate her own life with a "This Is My Life" segment. Angle told her this was a terrible idea. He called last week's segment with Bayley one of the worst in the history of Raw. Well, at least they're honest. And Angle recalled Bliss promising Nia Jax a title match, and she didn't like the. She acted like she didn't recall this. And Angle ended up booking her in a match against Jax for later in the show, a title match at that. And Bliss wasn't happy. And Angle, once she left, went back to kind of staring at his phone. They didn't really follow up on this either. There was another segment, as far as like any type of clue as to what it is, I'm saying. There was another segment that we'll get to, but really no answers tonight as to what it is that Angle is now consumed by. Dean Ambrose was shown walking backstage, and Corey Graves said he lost the Intercontinental title and was in a bad mood, and they went to a commercial. Afterward, Elias Samson sat in the ring and introduced himself and asked who wants to walk with Elias. And he started talking about he saw a leaf fall on the highway and it caused him to write this song. And he played his guitar and he started singing about the landscape change and how Wilkes Barre had no hope. And then he started talking about a lunatic walking away empty-handed in reference to Dean Ambrose, whose music interrupted him. Ambrose said he had something to say once he was out in the ring with him. And then he just hit Elias Samson with the mic and kind of worked him over with punches in and out of the ring. And then Ambrose returned to the ring with his mic and said he wanted a rematch on the spot for the Intercontinental title. That's when The Miz and Maryse appeared on the big screen. Miz said Ambrose would not get his title shot because he would be celebrating his Intercontinental title comeback tour. And Samson then attacked Ambrose from behind and put him down with a swinging neckbreaker and was kind of jawing while he was sitting there over Ambrose to end the segment. So it looks like we haven't seen the last of Elias Samson and Dean Ambrose. Remember, that was Samson's debut match. I do hope we get some more Elias Samson squash matches just to kind of help establish his moveset. I think it was last week he had the squash match. Between that and now this, you know, I think we're starting to figure out that the neck swinging neckbreaker is his finisher. But another squash or two couldn't hurt matters. But we'll see when Ambrose wraps up with The Miz. Hopefully sooner rather than later, because we've just seen way too much of that feud. Corey Graves then hyped Samoa Joe's appearance for after the break, and they went to a commercial. They gave us a SmackDown ad. that hyped the match that had already been advertised last week. Kevin Owens against Shinsuke Nakamura. No indication of the U.S. title being on the line, so it looks like a non-title match. They're playing this up as the first time ever, and I think technically it is the first time ever that Kevin Owens has faced Shinsuke Nakamura on television. Not necessarily the first time Kevin Steen has. Anyway, they're going to try to hype this any way they can. Of course, you can join Jake Barnett for live coverage as SmackDown airs 7 Central, 8 Eastern on USA Network. Then backstage, Dean Ambrose asked Angle where Miz's locker room was located, and he wanted his rematch. And Angle said he would get his rematch, but not on this show. Maurice had planned Miz's celebration, and he didn't want to deal with her. And Angle told Ambrose to cool off. And Ambrose said he would cool off in Miz's dressing room. And Angle stopped him and told him to leave the building. He made it clear that it, you know, wasn't a suggestion. So Ambrose was given the rest of the night off. Wasn't the last we would see of him. Samoa Joe made his entrance, and we ended up with the broadcast team recapping what happened at Extreme Rules and how he ended up winning the match. And then Cole even said it looked like Finn Balor was going to win. No Balor on the show, by the way. But Joe was in the right place at the right time is the way they framed this. And then they hyped Lesnar and Joe for great balls of fire. And Joe stood in the ring and received some boos and some Joe chants. And then Joe said he would make it simple. He said he does not fear Lesnar. He said he hates to admit it. He's incapable of fearing him because he's far too envious of him. He said he wants everything Lesnar has and he wants to take it from him. He said he wants Lesnar's schedule, where he doesn't have to show up and work in front of the people week after week and kind of can beat people up as he pleases. And he said, you know what? I want Paul Heyman. I want him to be my advocate. I want him to negotiate my contract. And I want him to run my errands. And he said, most importantly, he wants Lesnar's Universal Championship. And he said he will stare Lesnar in the eye and take that title from him at the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. Well, it was time for Paul Heyman to make his entrance. And he talked about Joe being the number one contender and said rightfully so, called him a destroyer and a badass, and he said he ate through four other opponents to earn his title shot against Lesnar, and he said, there he is, the man who left wreckage every single solitary place he has ever been in his entire career, the number one contender, Samoa Joe. And he said he's just an advocate. He did ask Joe's permission to enter the ring, which I always like, and then he said he knows that Joe doesn't fear Lesnar, but Lesnar doesn't fear Joe either. And Heyman said he thinks Joe likes that Lesnar doesn't fear him. Heyman said he has to worry for a living. And he said he looks at Lesnar's opponents and he gets concerned. It's what I do as a Jew, Heyman said, and got a few laughs for that. Heyman ended up recalling that that he wanted to see Lesnar and Finn Balor. And he said that it was a Rocky story and a license to print money. But he said Joe is actually the worst case scenario because he doesn't give a damn. And he said that he's not supposed to say it, but Joe wants to go to war with Lesnar. And Heyman said that even if Brock retains the title, he's not leaving the ring the same man. And he said it's his job to make sure that Lesnar is Joe's worst-case scenario. He said, Samoa Joe, you want Brock Lesnar, you got Brock Lesnar. And then they shook hands, and Heyman turned to leave. It looked like everything was fine, but Joe kind of calmly stopped him, backed him into a corner, wasn't too aggressive here. And then he very calmly, and this is when Samoa Joe is at his best, when he just very calmly talks and tells somebody what he's going to do. Joe falls into the trap of screaming too much during his promos. We've seen some of that in WWE. It's better than it was when he was in TNA. He used to scream a lot. It's like, Joe doesn't need to do that. You know, save the yelling for key points. That has always been my favorite. When Joe does that, that's my favorite Joe promo. But when he just talks calmly, almost like Jake Roberts used to do back in the day, it's really good. And what they did here was they had the camera mic pick up the conversation. So the live crowd's kind of left in the dark. But you could hear Joe telling Heyman that he was disappointed. I didn't catch why. I think it was because Lesnar wasn't there in person. And he told Heyman that something very bad was going to happen to him. He said he was going to wrap his arm around his throat, and Heyman would feel tightness. And he said Heyman's vision would get hazy until it went dark. And he said he wants Heyman to take the message to Brock that it was actually meant for him. And he told him to tell Lesnar, as only he can, what his future is. And then he ended up putting Heyman in the coquina clutch, and he yelled at Heyman to tell him, referring to Brock, and then several referees were begging him to let go, and the fans were chanting, we want Brock. I actually thought they were chanting, we want, or CM Punk. And I noticed some people on Twitter kind of thought the same thing. And Wade over at the Torch was nice to tell me that no, they were actually saying we want Brock, and he said he went back and double checked to make sure. So it made sense that they'd chant we want Brock. CM Punk entered my mind too. Some of it's cadence, but it's also because there's not just a history with Joe, but also the history with Paul Heyman. I was like, that'd be interesting if they were chanting that. But it turns out they were chanting, "We want Brock," which is, I assume, what WWE is looking for here. That's what I find. I really like the segment. I really like Joe's delivery. I really wonder if Paul Heyman wrote most of this. It sounded Heyman-esque. I'll just say that as far as some of the wording that Joe was using and things like that. And as I said on the live show, I'm all for that. If they, I mean, I'd love to see Heyman just be handed this assignment, going, "Hey, they're gonna do what they want as far as who goes over and all that." We know that, but I mean, it'd be pretty cool if it was just like, let this be Heyman's baby, because I do think he has a lot of respect for Joe, and I'd really like to see just how he would book this. I think would be pretty fascinating. I mean, Vince is gonna sign off. It's just the way things go in WWE. But I did feel like there was a lot of Heyman's fingerprints and all over this. But at any rate, I think the idea is that Brock is the babyface. And it kind of makes sense when you look ahead, and it seems like they're setting up Brock against Braun Strowman for the SummerSlam show. And if that's the case, well, Joe's a heel, and he's been a heel since he arrived on the main roster. And now Brock is going to face two heels in a row. Because that was the thing about Finn Balor. Even though I ultimately predicted Balor to win, it was like, well, so Joe is a baby, or I'm sorry, Lesnar is a heel when he faces the popular Balor, but then we're supposed to turn around, the fans are supposed to cheer for him at SummerSlam. And granted, I mean, I think Lesnar's kind of a special case where fans are going to react based on who he's in the ring with, but it doesn't seem like that's the way WWE does things. And so now you're kind of getting Lesnar in there back-to-back heels. You can certainly make a case that Strowman shouldn't be a heel, but he is. Assuming that's still the direction they're going in, I think it does make some sense. But yeah, interesting that Brock Lesnar kind of positioned as a babyface heading into this, coming back to avenge what happened to his advocate, Paul Heyman. And at this point in the show, it's like, I'm ready for this. This is going to be great. Joe and Lesnar and Heyman's doing a really good job, and Joe did a great job, and man, it's going to be this dream match we've been looking forward to. And then that main event happened. I'm like, oh, I just because I thought they were on the right path. I really did, until the main event. But more on that later, of course. Backstage, Angle was pissed and yelling when Joe calmed him down. So he was upset with Joe, and I said that he would take out anyone who gets in the way of him and Lesnar. Joe said the only question he had was whether Angle was in his way, and he went nose to nose with him, kind of staring down Angle. Is that foreshadowing? If Kurt does return at some point, who wouldn't want to see Angle and Joe again if Angle is medically cleared? Seth Rollins cut in front of Angle, though, and said Angle was not, but he was. Rollins said he beat Joe before, and he had no problem beating him again, and Angle booked a match between the two for later in the show, which turned out to be that main event. Then we ended up, the broadcasting method did a nice job. They were like, is this a wise move on Seth's part, considering the mood that Samoa Joe was in? So they're really putting over the element of danger with Samoa Joe. Second match, it was Sheamus and Cesaro defeating Heath Slater and Rhino in a non-title match in 140. They just dominated. The Hardys were not on this show. A very brief promo afterward where Sheamus and Cesaro talked about the Hardys returning and kind of mocking that they were probably unhappy now that they did. And the line again that they don't just set the bar, they are the bar. And Cole calling them the Bar Brothers. So I don't know if that's the tag team name they're going with. Did I miss out on one, or is that something they're coming up with now? Backstage, TJP told Neville it was time to talk about their deal. Long story short on this, he was supposed to help Neville take care of the Austin Aries problem. Well, I guess the Aries problem is solved according to TJP. So now it's time for Neville to hold up his end of the bargain. And Neville ended up saying that he's a man of his word, and if TJP could take care of business against Mustafa Ali, then he would speak to Angle. And they went to a commercial break. And going into that match, which came up after the break, I thought they were just going to have Ali win and kind of make Ali the guy that that Neville faces next. He's had some pretty flashy matches on 205 Live. He, like a lot of the guys, though, it seems like he just kind of flip-flops from wins and losses, and it's not like they've been giving him or anyone else all that much momentum on the show. But no, they actually had TJP beat Mustafa Ali in 240 clean with the detonation kick. And then afterward, Neville came out and he said he might be the king of the cruiserweights, but he's not a miracle worker. He talked to Angle, and no such luck, basically, was the story here. And TJP wasn't happy, but he was buying the story, and said, basically, I think was the idea. But anyway, he wanted to go with Neville to talk to Angle, and when he turned to leave, Neville attacked him from behind and then started barking about facing him on 205 Live. And we eventually found out that, yes, Neville will face TJP for the Cruiserweight Championship on 205 Live. Is that going to be more of an angle than a match? Because they're both heels. TJP was not, there was something about his personality, as good of a wrestler as he is and all that. Personality-wise, he just felt like a heel. I was happy when they turned him, and he just did everything he could to help Neville in his feud with Aries, so he doesn't strike me as a babyface. It just kind of would be awkward to turn him back again, but we'll see how it goes. That's 205 Live. John Moore will not have live coverage, but his review of the show will be up either late Tuesday or first thing Wednesday morning. And I think you guys will actually hear his audio review of the show coming up on Wednesday here on the All Access side. After a break, we got another Gold Dust video. Kind of more of the same. I'm still enjoying this. It's a fun throwback to see the Gold Dust character back in the director's chair, cutting those Shattered Dreams production videos. I'm definitely digging that. Then we went to Mickie James and Dana Brooke. We're talking with Sasha Banks and putting over her dance moves. I'm like, oh my lord. But Alexa Bliss showed up. She was very chummy, and Sasha just looked at her and said, yeah, no, and walked away. James and Brooke went to leave, but Alexa Bliss stopped them and questioned whether they were insulted that Jax was getting in front of them for a title shot. And Brooke said that they don't have a Jax problem, Bliss does. And James said they'd be at ringside to watch her deal with this problem all by herself. And at that point, I'm like, which one of them is turning? Believe it or not, neither one of them. More on that in a little bit. Kurt Angle came out as the broadcast team was talking, and he pulled Graves away from the desk. And Angle started pointing at whatever's on his phone, and they had a brief conversation as Cole and Booker just kind of sat there and watched them. And then Graves returned to his seat. Cole asked him what was going on. Graves said Kalisto was coming to the ring, and that was it. So this was the only other real segment. I guess they're going to kind of one more where Angle ends up leaving as he's looking at his phone. But, no real clue as to where this is headed yet, and I can't say what they're doing is really leaving me anxious. I guess I'm just kind of sitting back hoping it's not the return of Stephanie McMahon. Then we went to, after a commercial break, we ended up with Angle, who was asked about his conversation with Graves, and Angle told Mike Rome that it was a private matter, and then he left through the door. So, yeah, this is the part where he left the show. As that door was closing behind Angle, all of a sudden you could see an arm reach in and stop it from closing. And that's when Dean Ambrose re-entered the building. Fourth match was Kalisto beating Titus O'Neil in 125. Titus had Apollo Crews with him. Titus went for a pin, and he was pulling the tights. Well, Kalisto kind of rolled over, and he ended up holding the tights to get the win. I don't even know what to say about this. It's the Titus brand. I feel bad for Kalisto and Apollo Crews. Then we had a shot of The Miz and Maryse walking backstage while Cole hyped their championship celebration. They happened to see Big Cass was laid out on the floor. Basically, they didn't stick around, but the camera was focused on this then as a referee checked on Cass, and Enzo Amore showed up and asked what happened, and Cass recovered enough to hand Enzo a chain. And I guess the idea was that it was like Enzo's chain, because when they came back from the break, Enzo said whoever attacked him a few weeks ago must have taken that chain and brought it with them, I think was the idea. And Enzo said he hoped that Cass wasn't insinuating what he thought he was. And he said, I know you're not. And then the referees informed Enzo he still needed a partner because Cass was in no condition to perform for the match against Anderson and Gallows. My guess, and I think this is a popular guess, is that if there is a breakup, that, well, Cass is just faking it now. But I don't know. It could be that. He was bickering with Big Show. We'll get to that in a little bit. That kind of leaves you wondering. It could just as easily be, no, it's, really is going to be the revival. They're going to tease the Enzo and Cass breakup, maybe test the waters a bit, I don't know. But keep them together, and it's the revival doing this to them. But we'll see. And then it was time for the championship celebration. You had Maryse in the ring, was all made up with regular balloons, and then MIZ balloons for Miz, and then there was a bear, like a guy in a stuffed bear outfit, holding a congratulations sign. He had champagne out there, and she introduced Miz, and there was a small "You deserve it" chant. And Miz said that would mean a lot more if you fans didn't do it for every single wrestler who won a title in WWE. I got a kick out of that. And Miz said he deserves the title. And this is the beginning of his IC title comeback tour. I mean, this goes on for a little bit. And Miz starts to become convinced that Dean Ambrose is actually the guy in the bear outfit, as I'm sure pretty much most viewers were wondering if that was the case. And because we found out that, well, Maryse didn't have the guy there, and Miz said he didn't. And so Miz beat the hell out of this guy and then unmasked him. And it was not Dean Ambrose. So poor guy in the bear outfit. And then a bigger box was rolled out. It was not Abdul the Butcher or Mick Foley. Miz ended up attacking the box with a chair and then jumped onto it. All the while Maryse is pleading with him to stop. He ended up ripping the box open. And it was a grandfather clock that she had purchased for him. And Maryse ran backstage, so she's not happy. This was a giant box for a little tiny clock. As I mentioned on Twitter, I would be mocking the size of the box had I never ordered anything from Amazon. Especially my girlfriend has had some things sent to the house from just like, what? They use that packaging for this little item? But that's what they do. But anyhow, Miz called for Ambrose to show himself because he was still convinced that Ambrose was out there. And right he was, so just about the time you're thinking, well, maybe this one time they're not just going to make it so obvious. Well, it was a swerve of a swerve, and then we finally got Dean Ambrose, the cameraman. And Miz spotted him, tried to attack him. Miz ended up taking Dirty Deeds, and then Ambrose took a swig of the champagne and took the bottle with him. My biggest hope is that Angle's punishment is that Dean Ambrose never gets another title shot as long as Miz is champion, because I have no desire to see this feud continue. It felt tired on SmackDown, and now it's carried over to Raw. These guys are both good. It's not, you know, it's nothing against the two wrestlers. I've actually been very impressed by, especially on SmackDown, I was so impressed by the way Miz breathed some life back into his to his run. I mean, he just felt like a new man on SmackDown. And instead, you know, but now it's just like, all right, he's back as IC champion. He's feuding with Dean Ambrose. I get that he has to have a rematch. I was really hoping that, like, either they'd do that tonight or they would announce it for next week and we could move on. And they may end up, I mean, it looks like, you know, the Drifter, Elias Sampson, is going to be feuding with Ambrose. So maybe we are finally moving away from this. It'll be interesting to see who ends, or I'm sorry, Enzo, who Miz ends up working with if that turns out to be the case. They showed Enzo backstage and pointed out that he still needed a partner. And when they went to a break, actually, when they came out of the break, Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson were already in the ring. No televised entrance for them. Remember what a big deal it was when these guys, the Bullet Club are coming, man. Oh, what a, everyone was freaking out. And now they don't even get televised entrances. But Enzo came out with the mic in hand. And at this point, Gallows and Anderson had to roll out of the ring. There's two of them and one of Enzo. Their characters made it clear they hate listening to Enzo. But yeah, they had to roll out of the ring so Enzo could do his shtick. And all I could think of is, oh, what nice heels these guys are to roll out of the way so the babyface could have the spotlight. So weird. Well, Big Show was introduced as Enzo's partner. Somehow, was he introduced or did he just come out and volunteer? I don't even remember which. But Big Show ended up being the partner and they did a little shtick together. Show was acting like the angry giant. And, you know, Enzo was trying to get him to loosen up and he finally did. And he did his own little Enzo-like spiel, and this led to Big Show and Enzo defeating Gallows and Anderson in about a minute and 25 seconds. Show pressed Enzo above his head and onto Anderson, which led to the win. So it wasn't the boom shakalaka or whatever it's the rocket launcher, whatever the hell Enzo and Cass call their finisher. It was kind of like the Big Show and Enzo version of that, just with a, you know, kind of a little bit of a twist. This was fine. I mean, it was getting late in the show, or if this had happened earlier in the night, it might have gone over better. It just was starting to feel like the show was dragging. Coming out of a commercial, Cass approached Enzo and Show. Cass said Show had been gone a few weeks, but suddenly he shows up when Enzo needs a partner. So he's very suspicious of what's happening. And Joe told him that if he was coming for him, he would see him coming straight on. Enzo tried to ease the tension, invited Joe to go to the casino tables with him because they're at the Mohegan Sun, and Joe ended up telling them to go ahead. I think the idea was that Joe likes Enzo, but he wasn't going to put up with Cass, kind of a thing. And so Cass and Enzo wandered off together. So then we went to basically the R-Truth rebuttal to the Goldust segment from earlier, and he quoted A Few Good Men and Pulp Fiction again. So they're still setting up that match. I mean, I would think it's now going to take place at the Great Balls of Fire show. We obviously didn't see it at Extreme Rules. I thought they might be setting it up for that. I kind of like that they're taking their time. I don't know that I need to see. I guess I want to see a little more creativity from the R-Truth rebuttals. Goldust is just a fun throwback. You know, that's a. And I've said I'd like to see them do more with him coming out of this. I think Goldust is a great character, and I think Dustin Rhodes is terrific. But it just R-Truth already kind of repeating the Pulp Fiction line. Like, that's all you guys got for R-Truth rebuttal? And then backstage, Mike Rome said it's the most intense version of Truth that viewers had ever seen before. Like, no, not really. But anyway, he asked Alexa Bliss if she regretted promising Nia a title shot, and Bliss said that she regretted being on a brand where the other women have no buzz and are jealous of her. And then it was time for the, after commercial break, it was time for that women's match. It was Alexa Bliss beating Nia by DQ in 220. Jax pretty much dominated the offense. They did have Mickie James and Dana Brooke walk to ringside as they said they would, and they really were just going to watch. I was like, no one's turning. Good. I didn't want to see James turn again. It just would have been like three turns in very short time, or I guess two turns, but still, you know, she showed up as the heel, and she's already turned babyface. She'd be going right back to being a heel. Plus, she'd be reuniting with Alexa, who she feuded with when she just would have been a complete mess. And for that matter, Dana Brooke turned, but I can't say that I really care. But no, they were just standing there watching this, and what happened was Bliss ended up at ringside, and she was, you know, Nia was roughing her up pretty good. She ended up getting up. She ended up crawling over to where James and Brooke were standing, and they were kind of looking down at her laughing. And she ended up getting up and striking them, and then when they hit her, that was the DQ finish. And in the process, when Mickie James like took the big wind-up punch, Bliss ended up with a pretty nasty like bloody lip from the whole thing. I even went back. I'm like, that had to, like, was it something Nia did? Because you know we've seen Nia look kind of rough in the ring at times, but no, it looked like it was actually the punch that Mickie James threw, because that's when Alexa started clutching the lip and all of that. And then sadly the award for wrestler character stupidity goes to James and Brooke. Because even though they cost Nia the match, and even though she'd kind of already roughed them up at ringside a little bit, when she chased Alexa from the ring, they thought it would be a good idea to go in the ring and stand behind her. Really? Well, of course, Nia just destroyed them both. So, you know, I guess the disappointing part of this is the crowd was pretty quiet. I don't know if it was the time of the show, as I kind of talked about a minute ago, but it. You know, whenever they've teased these two, there's been really good crowd reactions. People seem to kind of enjoy the idea of the undersized Alexa Bliss, and I don't even know if it's a, some of it I'm sure is just the size difference between the two, but it's also, you know, that Bliss is just this unlikable character. Well, she's very, unfortunately for WWE, everybody seems to like the character at this point. But the idea is that she's this unlikable character, and you would want Jax to put her in her place. But I mean, so all these crowds, no, I shouldn't say all these, but I think they've teased it in a couple of different places, and when they have, the crowd has been very receptive. Unfortunately, here, the crowd very quiet. I don't know if they didn't care about who won. They weren't sure who they were supposed to cheer, and then just kind of decided to sit there. Again, it could have been fatigue at this point in the show. Yeah, I mean, they're both heels. Nia did come out flashing a big grin, so I don't know if that was her modern-day weird WWE babyface turn. I don't know if that's the plan is for Nia to go babyface or what it is. But it just didn't get over the way I hoped that it would. Backstage, we went to Paul Heyman being treated by a medical staffer. Heyman's phone rang, and he took the call. And the idea was that he was talking with Brock Lesnar, and he said that he should show up next week and they should unleash the beast. And all I could think of is, yeah, there's no way in hell Brock Lesnar's watching this show. Michael Cole hyped Rollins against Joe for after the break, and when they went to a com after they went to a commercial, they came back and Graves hyped that Neville TJP match, and then Cole said it was official that Brock Lesnar would return to Raw next week from the Cajun Dome. So Lesnar is back. We'll get the first, I would assume, confrontation between Lesnar and Joe, and then it was time for the main event. And it was Samoa Joe defeating Seth Rollins in 15:35. Joe looking very dominant early, looking really good, but it built up to Rollins making the big comeback and hitting a lot of his signature spots, including his, in my opinion, the over-reliance on the suicide dives. And yeah, I think he hit like three in fairly short order. And not that they ever. I mean, I just think back to like Austin Aries doing these crazy suicide dives and living up to the name when he was in Ring of Honor. And I'm actually happy he doesn't go all out like that anymore. Where, I mean, he would just fly through the ropes and perform that move. Seth, just, they look very safe, which, good. I mean, wrestler safety is a good thing, but almost too safe to where, to the point where it's like, then why do this? It just doesn't even look good. The third one that he did, basically, it just looked like he was gonna overshoot Joe, or he was. But at any rate, Joe just kind of reached up and caught him, and then just fell to the ground. And it just looked like, well, why is Joe falling? And I think the broadcast team was there, kind of trying to sell exhaustion. Yeah. So you know, I hate to be critical of it, but yeah, the suicide dive just looked kind of wonky. From there, though, so Seth's on this roll, and then he even hit the Falcon Arrow, got a two count. Connected with a super kick, and it's all Rollins. And I'm like, man, when's Joe gonna snap out of this and come back and put this guy away? And even if he did, it would have been like, man, it was just too much offense for Rollins for my taste right now, considering what they're trying to accomplish with Joe. But we didn't even get that. We had Bray Wyatt's video flash. Rollins starts looking around for Bray Wyatt, who never did show up, and Joe ended up applying the Coquina Clutch and getting the win that way. And so Samoa Joe ends up going over with help from a Wyatt distraction. How great would it have been had Bray Wyatt shown up in the ring and then just turned on Samoa Joe again? You know, made him think he was going to be. All right, not really, because we saw that way too many times, including at Extreme Rules. But yeah, just not a big fan of the way Samoa Joe went over to win this match. It just seemed like they're working too hard. With the parity booking there. They're go even Steven with this. They want to protect Seth Rollins, even though they're building up Joe. I wonder if this, does this say that they're only so committed to Samoa Joe in terms of, well, yeah, we're going to build him up for this match with Brock Lesnar to a point, but that's all we're building him up for. Not that they're not going to do anything with the guy, but that they're not really thinking about Joe as far as him being a true main eventer coming out of this show, and so they're not going to go all the way with it. And I just don't know. I don't want to read too much into it, but that did cross my mind seeing the way that this was done. But you know, the question I asked, are they more concerned with setting up the main event of this pay-per-view or Rollins against Wyatt for this pay-per-view? You know, give me the build-up for the main event. Make Joe feel like a badass here. I think they have, what, 3 weeks of Raw left? Maybe, I think 3 weeks, three editions of Raw, I believe, left before the pay-per-view. And yeah, we'll get Lesnar here starting next week, but I want to see Joe taking some people out. I want to see Joe looking like a badass, and hopefully they have something designed with Brock Lesnar where that's going to happen. But yeah, he wasn't destroyed, but the first part with Paul Heyman, so much better than we had with the main event, where Seth Rollins ended up only losing because Bray Wyatt provided a distraction. But kind of a strange night overall. No Hardys, no Austin Aries, no Bayley. They had some different people sitting out of this show to kind of and no Finn Balor, as I mentioned earlier. So you know, a number of bigger names who just were absent. And you know, not that they were greatly missed, just more of a kind of an observation. I think, you know, you considering that, I think it ended up being a decent show. But again, I like the first part of the show more, even though the first part of the show ended up having, like, I think two matches, and I don't know, God, how long did they go? Yeah, it was, the third match took place at basically 90 minutes into the show. So the first 90 minutes ended up having two matches, and one of them was the Minute and 40 Classic that featured Sheamus and Cesaro against Heath Slater and Rhino. So, you know, I'm not always somebody who needs to see wrestling, wrestling, and nothing but wrestling. If the storylines and the promos are entertaining enough, That's good enough for me. And so I know that's not necessarily going to be for everybody, but I wasn't, we had the good long Roman Reigns and Bray Wyatt match, and then we had a lot of, basically an hour of different promos and things like that. So I enjoyed that. I thought that was well done, but then they just kind of did, they kind of started to lose me as the show went on. And hopefully I haven't done that with you, but just in case, I'm going to end it here. Don't forget to join Jake Barnett for live coverage of SmackDown. The members will hear my audio review of SmackDown coming up this evening. You guys will hear the 205 Live audio show with audio recap with John Moore coming up on Wednesday for the All Access Daily podcast. Remember, if you enjoy these full-length reviews of the major television shows, you hear some of them on the All Access side. On the membership side of things, the members hear my Raw review every Monday night, my SmackDown review pretty much every Tuesday now, every Tuesday night, and all the major television shows reviewed, and pay-per-views for that matter. Jake Barnett and I got together, as we do after all WWE pay-per-view events. We get together after Extreme Rules, talk for just shy of an hour, and that's pretty much the norm. Plus, Ring of Honor, television and pay-per-view reviews, Impact Wrestling the same, NXT, 205 Live. The list goes on. We've just got a ton of audio content available, and we're just talking about the show reviews. We're not even getting into Q&A, the .NET Weekly audio show, and the list goes on. If you are interested in membership to our ad-free site, visit the main page and click into the sign-up area. You will find three different pricing options available. We would love to have you sample what we do, so sign up for a month. See if it's a good fit for you. You want to save some money, though, check out those six-month and annual rates. You have any questions, follow me on Twitter at ProWrestlingNet or shoot me an email at dotnetjason@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, everybody. Take care.